Well, welcome all of you who are here for this MISTECH monthly webinar. We are less than 2 weeks before the summer solstice, and here in the Northern Hemisphere, it'll be the summer solstice, of course. And I'm impressed how many of you have shown up today. Uwe and I were just talking about, will we get anyone given how warm and nice the weather has been, and the calling to be outdoors on a day like today, either at the beach for some of you, or in the gardens, or just out for a walk. So these are the monthly MISTECH webinars, and I'm very happy we have Uwe Behrmann here today. I met Uwe at last October's Natural Science Section conference at the Goetheanum. We were back-to-back speakers, and that was absolutely wonderful. And it turned out we paired up well because he brought the history of computing up to the present, and then I tried to foresee where this was all going. But I was so impressed with what he brought. We spoke afterwards about having him here as a MISTECH webinar speaker, and here he is. So before I turn this over to Uwe, I'd like to remind you all that MISTECH has an exciting annual conference during the time of the Perseid meteor showers. When is that? Well, the conference is August 9th to the 12th, and the Perseid meteor showers peak on the 11th and the 12th this year. And the site of this, which is Pine Hill Waldorf School, is part of the High Mowing School. And from the top of this hill, you have a wonderful view of the heavens. So there'll be some great opportunities for watching the Perseid meteor showers. I'd also like to say a word about MISTECH. We feel that our initiative is very much a Michaelic one. The initiative of MISTECH is to help humanity to realize the mechanical occultism at the right time in the West. Additionally, it seeks to arm anthroposophists to confront and to wrest from Ahriman what will be needed for our further evolution to help us overcome the fear of Ahriman. To navigate towards this goal, MISTECH must build an awareness of the need for this initiative within both anthroposophy and the world. Thus, MISTECH offers numerous study groups during 3 terms each year. That's from September to Advent, and then January to April, and April to June. And we're just finishing up a number of courses right now. And I'll say hundreds of people have participated in these online study groups. And then we offer these webinars. So with that, let me just say a little tiny bit about Uwe himself. Oh my goodness, you were born in 1968? I was finishing high school then. In Oldenburg, Germany. And he is currently a pedagogical therapeutic media advisor. Now, of course, some of you whose kids have taken cyber civics must have an idea what that is. So he works with parents, pupils, students, and teachers. In addition, he gives lectures and seminars in schools and in universities across Europe. And he is well-loved in part because he's the author of several books that have become popular in Europe, as well as several professional articles. And he can write about this because, like me, he's the happy father of 3 children. So over to you, Uwe, and thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you very much, Andrew. Yes, hello. Yes, I'm very thankful that you invited me and gave me the chance to have this talk here. I just want to say that I'm German and not a native English speaker, so I really will try my very best, but maybe sometimes I will have a little struggle with words, and I hope you will apologize it. Yes, today I want to talk about the polarities of the internet. And first, we will take a look at the physical base of computing, which is, of course, also the physical base of the internet itself. At the beginning of computing, computers used relays. You might remember this little tiny, or not little, not very tiny relays, which work with the copper spiral and need a lot of copper, need a lot of space. Yeah, and that was when it started with the first computers, Konrad Zuse, 1936, the Z1. Later on, Enigma from IBM. By that time, computers were calculating systems. Of course, they already could deal with words. But of course, by that time, an invention like the World Wide Web was not imaginable. So it needed some steps to come out of this, from here to somewhere else. And that's the first thing I want to take a look with you on. Now, let's see. Here we are. Yes. I hope you can see it. Yes. Right. So, the first invention that was needed was the invention of the transistor, which happened in the Bell Laboratories through John Bedeen, Walter Brattain, and William Shockley, you see on the right side. They came to invent the first transistor, which you see on the left, out of a germanium crystal. And the main point is that they made a material, germanium, which normally doesn't transfer energy, through a certain process, which is called dotation, to be able to let energy pass through. And therefore, we have the first Halbleiter. Andrew, can you help me? Halbleiter?
No, I can't. Sorry, yeah. First outlighter?
Half lighter.
Yes, you're talking about semiconductor?
Yeah, semiconductors. Thank you very much. Yes, the first semiconductor out of germanium. That was in 1947. The first revolution that came out of the transistor was not immediately connected to computers, but to the transistor radio, which had a very big impact by that time, because till that time, when people were outside, were in the gardens, were at the sea, at the beach, people used to sing, used to play guitar, used to make their own music. And the transistor radio really made a big change that more and more people stopped making music themselves and started to listen at the beach, at the garden, to the transistor radio shows and to the music that came out of there. So it took another time till we come to a very interesting invention. In 1958, Jack Clare Kilby, who worked at Texas Instruments, invented the first really semiconductor, also from germanium. And as you can see on the picture, it's really an interesting piece of work. Now, the story behind it, he started in May to work for Texas Instruments, and then came the summer lockdown, and all the people went to holidays, except him. So he had to come every day to the laboratory to work. But in a way, he didn't have really work to do. So he really, yeah, tried and worked on this idea what to do out of germanium. Now, the piece you see there is 2 centimeters long, and it's the first integrated conductor. Now, after the vacation time, his colleagues came back. He presented to them what he invented, and his boss and other colleagues were, that's nice work, but they didn't really see what is the chance of this invention. But one colleague of him, he really was inspired. He quit his job at Texas Instruments, Robert Noyce, and 1 year later, he founded the first chip company, Fairchild, and started to produce integrated conductors and the first chip, as you can see here on the right side. If you take a look at it, you can see we have 4 switches. So this is a half editor, not a full editor, but a half editor integrated now into the lithium. And that was a big step that he came up to work with the lithium instead of germanium. Now, the lithium is one of the most materials we have on this planet. The lithium is in all animals, all plants, nearly all animals, all plants, all human beings. We have the lithium in our fingernails, in our hair, and in also in our skin. So it's a material we have plenty of. The point with the lithium is also the lithium, if we have it in natural context, is not able to transport energy. So it's an isolating material. The lithium is in 2 aspects very similar to water. One is, as you know, that water, the highest Dichte, so with 4 degrees Celsius, water has the highest of amount of intensity.
I can't help you. I don't know.
Yes. I can understand. I will give a better description. So you know that when water gets into the wet into the hard
to ice.
Yes. When it becomes ice, it
expands.
It's less heavy than when it's water.
Right.
Yeah. Someone rose his hand. Ricardo D'Otamo.
What's up, Ricardo?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
The word you're looking for is density. The water has the greatest density at 4
degrees. Yes, thank you. Density. Thank you very much. Yes, that's it. Yes, it has the greatest density when it has 4 degrees. And it's similar with the lithium. The lithium gets into fluid consistence by 1,400 degrees Celsius. But it has the biggest density. So
Hold on one second. I believe, yes. Valdemar, did you have a comment on this?
Do you hear me?
Yes.
No, I just had the word density before. Okay. Question and answer. Andrew, if you allow me to chat, maybe I'll put some words on the chat when Uwe has some problems.
Yeah, you can use chat.
That's very nice.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And lower your hands if you're done. Thank you all.
Right.
I don't see my hand.
No, the virtual hand. We will talk about that later. Right. So that's one similarity between water and silicium, that the highest density is in liquid condition. The other is that you all know that water is connecting to all other sorts of materials very friendly. And that's the same also with silicium. So when it's connected to other elements, it gets into closer connections or into mixture. And that's the secret behind it. So when we have the normal silicium, which belongs to the element group 4, which means we have 4 electrons, free electrons, it doesn't transfer energy. So it's isolating. But if you connect or bring it together either with pure oxygen or with pure phosphor, it will become the ability to to let energy go through. And we will take a closer look, and I will show you some pictures to make it more understandable. Yeah, but that's a basis now for all computers in our times, that we work with silicium. And here I have a piece of pure silicium, which is used to produce later on computer chips. It's looking very nice. It's very not very heavy. And it always become such crystals. That's one point. So at the end, we will want to come here to a computer chip. This might remember you of old times is the 486 computer. So it's from the 90s, which has this size. Yeah. But if you take a look at the chip inside, it's just that small, not even a square centimeter. And that's also for the computers we have today. So there's a lot of verpackung, things around it. The main computer chip is not even a square centimeter in size out of silicium. So now let's see how it's done. Doc, here we go. So, can you see the picture? Yes. Okay. Now, as you can see above, we have this pure silicium, which becomes in this crystal situation. And out of this, we can't produce computer chips. So what we need is a solar crystal, which you can see down below, which has to be made artificial. So it's not a natural product. And the other special thing is it has to be absolutely clean. So on 1 ton of silicium that we can use to produce computer chips, is only allowed 1 gram of dirt, whatever dirt might be. It could be oxygen or whatever. So, and that is also a very important point already, yeah, because computer chips must be produced in special conditions. We need pure, in German we say Reinsträume. So we need an absolutely pure surrounding where no dirt, like our normal atmosphere, is allowed. And that also includes that in the factories where computer chips are produced, we not only have cleared air, but in certain areas of the factory, we have artificial made air so that there is really no dust and no other gas included. And we will see there are also parts of the productions where we are in rooms where there is no breathable air for human beings. So we have situations where the production is in pure phosphor, as I said, for example. So no human being and no other living being from our planet could exist in this situation. Yeah, and that's also a hard task for the people who work there. You can see already in those pictures what they have to wear. Now, after pandemic times, we are a little bit used to see people with masks and et cetera, but we will see it will even get worse. Yeah. So the first thing is we have to come to this monocrystal of pure silicium. Now, and here comes this point like with water. Yeah, so you can see we have here an oven where silicium is made liquid. Yes, you can see it up in the right corner. There we see still some parts of the silicium crystals. And then it becomes fluid. And then there is a little Impf crystal, which is put into the liquid and then turned around very slowly and pulled up in this process. And it's a very slow rotation. And because the silicium that gets cold and becomes hard is not so heavy like the liquid silicium, we can get the monocrystal in a long way. Like we saw in the picture here, it can become like nearly 2 meters. And you can see it's only this tiny bit where it hangs on. So there is no hard move allowed. It must be all very accurate. That is not, it doesn't break up here and be destroyed when it falls down. So this is the first process. And because we need perfection, after having the monocrystal, that's not enough because there might be still something of dirt inside. Now here you see where we come from. So we have the silicium here, then we have the monocrystal, and out of this we will get the wafers, the so-called wafers, where we can start to produce the computer chips. Right, so after the chips are, or the wafers are produced, we now come to the next step of really making the chip structure. Yeah, and here you can see when we come to the real chip producing area, that it's not only normal protection clothes like we saw before, but that those people And of course, nowadays, there are very few people working there. Most is done now by robots. That they have to really be protected, or the silicium has to be protected from the human being, even from his breathing, because that might be already too much dirt into the air the people breathe. Now, the silicium wafers will be cleaned again. And here we are. No, what happened? I'm missing some pictures. Okay. I don't know what happened here. Right. Now, the process of getting to where we want to, and that is the processor, is that now the silicium wafer has to be cleaned, then it has to be heated up, has to be brought in contact with pure phosphor, so that parts of it, the upper part, will be able to transfer energy. We work with masks, and then we bring up, in our days, 20 layers of parts. Some are isolated, some are able to transfer energy. Yeah, and that is the structure we now have in our computer chips. And the main thing is that the whole process is a process which in many steps is not able to be done in our normal world. So we really can see the picture of subnature working processes taking place in making the basis for what we need for computing the computer chips. Yeah, and that's why some chip companies would really like to build chip companies on the moon or out of space, because it would make it much more easier and in a way cheaper to produce computer chips far away from the Earth out in space than it is here on our planet, where the whole process has to be taken out of the normal physical conditions. Yeah. And this picture is, for me, a really interesting picture. Yeah. We see this guy totally out in an outer world situation. So he has a full body suit, he has his own inner oxygen supply system, because he is in an area in a chip company where he couldn't survive if he is not full protected from this area, and he is carrying a wafer. So in a way, what we have here is a picture for the mirrored cultus. Yeah. Yeah, you know that in Catholic Church, the hostia is also called wafer. Yeah, and so we have here an Arimanic sort of Arimanic cultic situation, that the human being is in a realm where he can't exist on its own, but is only able to be there because of technical support and artificial situation. So that is the the Arimanic basis we have for all of our computer technology. That we deal with technology that must be produced out of normal Earth and life conditions. And it works probably as we know. Yeah. So that is one side of computing. And also on the programmer's level, we have the situation that computers only can work with stored data. So it's there's not really a chance to invent something new. You know, we have always the situation that we have old data. And then we have the process of digitalization itself. So what means digitalization? Digitalization means I have some sound waves, for example. In analog media, we can find the sound wave on the medium, like on the old record. Yeah. And if you have very good eyes, you can see on your record, on your LP, you can see the sound waves in the rinse of the LP. Digitalization now means we have to transform whatever we want to digitalize into numbers. So we don't have the sound wave anymore, but now we have to have two axes. We have to have the hertz of the vibration from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. That's a normal realm we have for a CD. And we have the time axis. And then we define how often we will measure. And that means out of the wave, we will get stairs, little tiny stairs. And that's what we can store, because we need numbers that we can transfer into dual numbers. And that's what we can store in our computer systems. But that means the first step of digitalization is scalierung. That includes that we have fragmentation. So the original is fragmented into millions, billions of pieces. And then in the last step, we have reconstruction. But it always means whatever comes out of the computer is not the original. It's a reconstruction of fragmented pieces that were transferred into numbers. And that means the computer always can work with what is stored already. And that's very interesting, with all the discussions we now have about artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, etc. Many people are so very impressed what comes out of the machine. And of course, they are funny things, they are impressive things, but we always have to be aware that neither ChatGPT nor Alexa nor Siri have any clue what they are talking about. So they don't know what weather is, they don't know what the sun is, they don't know what rain is, and ChatGPT doesn't know what he's writing down in a way of knowing, but he is reproducing out of the old stored information according to algorithms. So also in the programmer's level, we have pure Aramaic mathematical logic. And we have it on the physical basis, as I described, with the computer chips that are produced in a realm that is out of living Earth context. So we have a pure picture of Aramaic technology. That's the one side, which is the basis for all computing and, of course, also for the internet. Now, let's take a look at the other side. In 1994, the World Wide Web became usable for common people. And by that time, I mean, I'm one of those who really joined the World Wide Web right from the beginning. I already knew the situation we had before, when we had to dial directly from one computer to another. And now came the World Wide Web, with the chance to log into the web, to be connected worldwide immediately instead of dialing just one computer, etc. And by that time, when the internet was founded, we really had really big ideals according to this new technology in many realms. And one aspect was, and that was first named by Sherry Turkle, who is a psychologist, who said this new technology has a very big chance for human development on the personal level, and out of this also on society and worldwide level. And she was the first who really said, yes, and this medium especially must be brought to the young people. Because her idea was that she said, now, what does it mean to be in poverty? It means you just one day you wake up and you ask yourself, who am I? And the answers you will get that day, and we all went through this day, is that you discover that all that defines you are roles. Roles that you didn't choose, but that were given to you. I'm a German because my parents were Germans and I was born here. I'm living in this and that town. But that was not my decision. My parents decided to live here. I'm going to this school. My parents decided that I'm going to this school, etc., etc. So the first impression of a young one in this situation is, who am I? I have no clue. And you have a very nice picture in Peer Gynt where someone is taking an onion and looking for the center of the onion. And he takes off one piece, one piece, one piece. Yeah, that's my country, my age, my time, etc. And what is left is nothing. There is no inner part. And that's the real situation of poverty. And now what then happens, and we all went through it, is that as a young one, you now choose a group. You become heavy metal fan or whatever. And of course, it's not the picture of yourself, but it's the first role you'd really picked by yourself. That's the main thing. And that was a picture of youth movements we used to have till the 90s, that we have ravers and we have gothic people, etc. Yeah, and it was very clear. Each young one decided on a certain point to choose this group, to go to the cheerleaders or to go to the freaks or whatever. And that included you had to make your style, you have to have a certain hair style, etc. You do have to wear special clothes, etc., etc. Now came the internet, and the internet brought, especially at the beginning, the possibility that we had 100% anonymity. At the beginning, we had no pictures, no video conferences like this. We just had chat, text-based chat. And that meant that from the other people you communicated with, you only knew what they were telling about themselves. And you had no chance to prove it, in a way. And that was a point for Sherry Turkle, where she said, now, that's very super, especially for young ones, because in normal life, when I'm not quite sure am I a heavy metal guy, or am I a punk, or am I a goth fan, or maybe I should do more sports? Yeah, it was not very easy to check it out. One day trying this, to be hang around with those people, next day to hang around with the others, because you had to have a certain style. And when you were looking like a freak, you couldn't go next day to the baseball guys and say, now guys, let's go and play baseball. That didn't work. But she said, with the internet, young ones will have the chance to try whatever they want without the need of changing their personal appearance in reality, without the need to buy new clothes, to wait till the hair is longer again, and whatever. And that was her idea. And she also, by that time, and it was in 1996 when her first book was published, so 2 years after the internet could be used by common people, she said already also, yes, and it will give the people also the possibility to try gender questions. So as a man with the internet, I could have the opportunity to try, can I get through as a woman? Or vice versa. Can I go into a women's group and chat with women in a way that they don't see that I'm a guy, but that they accept me as part of their community? And by that time, she really said that would be a great thing for young people to find faster who they are really. And that, of course, would mean that we will get more grown-up people who are self-confident, who have find their place in the world, in society, faster and more secure. And that, of course, would lead to a pure benefit for our whole societies. That was the idea. Now, if you look back from our days, we can see, in a way, it didn't work, yeah? And especially with the young ones. What we see in our days is, especially through TikTok and Instagram, that depressions increase, that we get more and more media addicted young ones, and the WHO already now 2021 put internet addiction and computer gaming addiction on the level of normal diseases. So we really see we get more and more problems instead of more and more young people who grew up probably faster, who become more self-confident, etc. So the contradiction happens. Now, what is the reason? And the point is that the realm of the internet is the realm of illusion. And that already started with this anonymity at the beginning. So to have a typical chat situation from the beginning of our century, some people met in a chat area, one with the name, let's say Peter 25 and Michelle 23. So that are the nicknames that appeared. Yeah, and then we have the typical chat situation, if it's just an open chat and not a certain thematic chat. Yeah, the first question from Peter would be like, yeah, where are you from? And he will get an answer like, California. Oh, I'm also from California. Where are you from? Los Angeles. Okay. And chat goes on, and after a while, of course, there will be the question, so how are you looking? And the answer would be, yeah, well, I'm 1 meter 75. I have long blonde hair, blue eyes, and a nice chocolate skin. Whatever. Now, the question is, what does the person who reads this imagine? Is it what the other person really looks like? Is it possible? No, it's not possible. What does 1 meter 75 centimeter mean? Okay, that's a clear answer. I can measure it. Okay, but what does long blonde hair mean? Curled hair, flat hair, this long, this long, this long, this long? Yeah. And which kind of blonde? What does blue eyes mean? Yeah. And there we can see immediately that this sort of conversation leads not to really meet the other person, but to build up an imagination of the others I meet, which, when we come to the question of flirting and hoping to come together for a relationship, in most cases is hindering, because most of the people by that time didn't fell in love with the other, but with the image they made up themselves of the other person. And that's the reason why so many relationships didn't work. Of course, we all know cases where it worked, that people really got together through the internet. But if we take a close look, we always will discover that in those cases, it only worked because both were right from the beginning absolutely honest. Now, if we look at the internet world today, we have pictures, we have video conferences. Now, you can see me right there over the ocean, me sitting here in Berlin, and you have an impression of myself, of course. But if you look at social media platforms, then what happened there is that right from the beginning, Facebook, etc., especially young people started to make up a picture of themselves. Yeah? So they are not honest. They made themselves look a little bit older, a little bit cooler. And soon they started to work with Photoshop and other effects to pimp up their appearance. So that leads to the point that they get a lot of friends, a lot of, no, not friends, but followers, that they get a lot of intention, but not for themselves, not for their inner being, but for the image they make up of themselves. So what we can see is that in many cases, especially with young ones, the system and possibilities of the internet as a digital realm lead to the point that they don't find themselves, but lose themselves. And a lot of young ones now really have the problem that because they see the difference, they discover the difference. They have thousands of followers on social media, but when they walk around the street, people don't identify them, because the image they have in the digital world is made up and not connected to the physical being. What leads to the point that they go to a clinic to transfer their physical appearance to make it similar to the internet appearance, to get in real contact with the hope to get in real contact again. So what we have here, and I hope I could bring it to you with those examples, is that the internet, as on the medium level, is a medium with all his possibilities that leads to bring us away from reality, to bring us away from our own body, to bring us into a constructed virtual world, which sort of endless possibilities, but with a problem that soon, very soon, we are not able to connect it to the physical world anymore. That's the danger. And that's the danger, especially for young ones. And interestingly, a few years ago, now Sherry Turkle wrote a new book, because she always scientifically followed the development of the internet. And I don't know if maybe she already has a new book, but the last book I know from her is Lost Under 1,000 Friends, where she also has a very nüchtern, so not frustrated, but she sees that the idea she had and the ideal she had connected to the internet didn't work out. That it led at the end, in most cases, to the opposite. That people, young people, don't find themselves, that they don't get better self-confidence, and grew up in a proper way, but that they really lose the contact to real life, get frustrated, depressive, etc. So that is the picture we have on this side. Now there's a comment. Agreeable, thank you. Yes, right. Yes, so this is the other side of the internet, and that's a pure Luciferic side. And it was very interesting, Andrew said it at the beginning, I'm working at a pedagogical therapeutical media advisor in schools, seminars, high schools, universities, and when I work with the high graders in school or with the students, and we talk about those topics, it's very interesting. And I just want to show you something, because that was with pupils from class 12, where they and the art teacher asked them to paint a picture how they feel when they are in online. Here we come. Yes, that was one pupil. So we see the computer, and from the human being is just face, brain, and hand. We have eye contact with the screen, writing, typing, and interestingly, we have the pain parts at the knee and at the bottom. So that is shown there. The rest of the body is vanished, and only the pain from long sitting makes you be aware that you have a bottom and that you have knees. Not another student. Brain, eye, hand. The vanishing of the contact to the own body. And the step into the imagined virtual world. So what we see in the invention of the internet is that on the physical or sub-physical level, we have pure Ariamanic forces. But on the virtual level, we have the impact of Luciferic forces. Normally, as we know from all the descriptions from Steiner, normally those two forces are not able to appear at the same place and in the same context, except when a much higher being, and Steiner called it Zorat, is in his rhythm of being able to work and have an impact on Earth's development, which is all 666 years. And interestingly, the last Zorat period was 1996. And we see 1994, the invention of the internet. Yeah, so in this period of time, where Zorat became able again to have an impact on Earth and bring Ariamanic and Luciferic forces together without destroying each other, we see the invention of the internet. So we really have in the internet, when we take those polarities, this interesting realm where both forces try to catch man. One thing is this Ariamanic structure, which we see and which we all know from ourselves. Working with computer has an impact beside internet. And we all know that we all have learned through computing to have data structure, to separate informations, and that has an impact on us as human beings. And when you are someone who have to work 8 hours a day on a computer, and especially when you're informatica, yeah, you know, you get into a certain way of thinking, and it's very Ariamanic logic thinking, and it's very hard to overcome it when you get in contact with other people, to bring it in your family life, etc. It's not impossible, but it's a real hard task. Yeah, and we all know some nerds who are really so much nerds that they're just in this Ariamanic thinking area. And then we have the other side with the internet, this Luciferic realm, where everything is possible. Think of the computer game addicted people who are not able to handle normal daily life, who have to be fed with 25 still by the parents, otherwise they would starve in front of the computer. And we all know that those cases already exist, that people died in front of the computer because they were totally gone into the virtual world, World of Warcraft, whatever. Yeah, and lost the total contact to their body. They didn't feel that they're hungry, they didn't feel that they are thirsty, etc. Yeah, and this is a realm we all have to work with. And as always, or we could say, oh yeah, so it's luciferic aryanic realm, internet is all right. So switch off the computer immediately. Go outside in the garden, sit down, take a look at the real world, meditate, and try to prevent yourself for the impact of those forces. Yeah? But as we know, that's not the task. The task is not to avoid it. The task is to gain the inner forces, to be able to show both sides where they have to go. Like we have in the, as a picture in the statue from Rudolf Steiner, which was right at the beginning of my presentation, and which I will show you again shortly. Where we see that the man who stands between Arimanic and Luciferic forces to bring them into their realm, to hold them there, and to be free in the middle. But that means that the people who go to internet have to be already developed human beings, grown up human beings. And what we see at the moment, which is a real disaster, it's not the internet itself, but it's the situation that nowadays kids, I mean, I really now talk about kids, are already getting in contact with the internet. 10 years old, 11-year-old children, and even younger ones, who already get their iPad, their smartphones, etc., and who really start to get a childhood and a youth into the realm of Zorat forces, of Luciferic and Arimanic forces. And all the diseases we can see that are now increasing under young ones, bulimia, depression, etc., are a picture of the attack on the young ones that is taking place here. So, and that is a task for my work as a pedagogical therapeutical media advisor, to bring this insight to parents, to teachers, etc., to really come to discover that it needs a certain development in reality, still in reality, to develop social skills, to develop self-confidence, etc., which is only possible in real life contexts. And that could be the base then to go and use the internet as a free human being without being captured either by the Arimanic forces, who tear us down, who make us become materialists, or to let us take away from the Luciferic realm that tries to take us away from our physical appearance, from our physical body, and from the contact to the real physical world. So that is the area we are talking about, and these are the polarities we will find, or we can see at the internet. Yeah, as said, I will show you the picture, but I think you all know it. But no. To have it at the end as a picture again. Yes, here we see on the left side the Arimanic forces, on the left side the Luciferic forces, and the represent of man standing between both to bring them to the place where they belong. And that's what we have to teach our children, and that's why we have to prevent our children from getting too early in contact with this medium. So thank you very much for listening to what I said. Thank you, Andrew. And we still have time. So maybe you have some questions or...
Yes, let's take your questions from the audience and so on. And I will just make a quick comment. First of all, thank you very much. That was excellent. And Mistech has wondered and sort of developed, we'll call them preliminary counterbalances, in addition to what you're talking about. For example, going out for a walk every day, and I'm going to use the word breathing. I don't mean air breathing, breathing the sunlight.
Yes.
Every day in an hour walk or jog or whatever you might like to do. But the more social that is as you're doing it, and the more observing, so don't go running with headphones on and listening to music.
Yeah. Right.
Or even Rudolf Steiner's lecture. Right. The other, you might comment, but the question sort of is, does using these iPhones and internet operate on the soul, so that the human soul becomes more and more estranged from the physical body? And if so, would fasting one day a week actually be helpful to cause a kind of soul recapturing, reasserting itself upon the physical body? So that's your first question.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it depends. I think for us, it's enough. as I described, we all, of course, also have the impact of the media. But if we really have, like you said, 1 hour a day where we step back, where we get out, where we really get in contact. Because our childhood and youth was mainly analog, this 1 hour for us is enough. For the young ones, it's not.
2 hours.
Yeah. Now, I don't know the average times in the US, but in Germany now, in the group of 15 to 18, the average time of being online is 7 hours a day. So it's even much more than normal school time. Yeah? And in the last research that was done about talking in this age between parents and pupils, the average time in Germany is 13 minutes a day. And that's the average time of talking between parents and young ones in this age. And on the other side, we have 7 hours of Instagram, TikTok, YouTube shorts, computer games. And there, 1 hour. Now, what I suggest, and that's really a hard theme for me, is that at least class trips from school, which go a week, should be always experiments of detoxication, technical detoxication. So no smartphone, and as you said, even no MP3, so that they really sit there outside and there's no input but nature. and from experience, I know for some young ones, it takes really 3 days that they discover that there still is input, but it's not the input they can handle anymore, like bird songs, etc. It really takes a time for them to accept that this is something is happening, even if there's nothing on the screen.
Yeah. Well, Valdemar Setzer is going to ask a question, and just to introduce him, Valdemar is a professor of computer science down in São Paulo, Brazil. Valdemar.
Yes, thank you very much, Uwe. Vielen Dank für deinen Vortrag.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to add something to your arguments. In his book, The Shallows, right? My image is not appearing, but doesn't matter. Nicholas Carr has a chapter called On the Right in Digression, on the writing of this book. And he tells the story that he was a journalist, a reporter, journalist, and worked the whole day for 10 years with his computer. And then he noticed that he could not concentrate anymore on a longer text, like a book or a paper. So he decided to give up his profession. He rented a house in the mountains and so on with a very poor internet connection. And then he tells that he tells a very good news, piece of news, that he regained his concentration power. So this is very good news, that an adult can regain the ability of concentrating, because he says the internet is highly distractive. He uses this this now distractive or adjective, and but he doesn't say something very, very important that I thought about. What happens with young people that did not have the chance of developing their concentration power, their mental concentration? You know, he doesn't say what happens, but maybe they'll be almost lost, because they have, how could they regain a concentration that they did not develop? In fact, small children are able to concentrate on real things like an ant or, you know, something like that, a flower and so on. But then they lose very, very early their concentration, the ability to concentrate using the internet. And they'll never be able to recover it, because they didn't develop the ability of concentrating on texts, for instance, or pictures or something like that, right? But what do you have to say about this? What's your experience?
Yeah, that's the situation. Just to ask one thing again, how is the English title from the book from Nicholas Carr?
The Shallows. Yes.
Okay. Yes, what I know the book.
There is a subtitle, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. I don't like the yes. word brain, but it doesn't matter.
Just to say, the German title of the book, translated into English again, is Who Am I When I'm Online and What Is My Brain Doing in Between? That's the German title.
Oh, great.
Wer bin ich, wenn ich online bin, und was macht mein Gehirn so lange? Aber gut.
In Portuguese, the title is The Superficial Generation.
Ah, okay. No, but to come back to your question. No, that's really the drama. And I really think it's a drama I see. Yeah, as you say, small children normally have the capability to be concentrated, and that's what normal child play is like. They're concentrated on a book, or they can play with little tiny things half an hour. And now we see more and more parents who hand out their smartphones and tablets, even to two-year-old children. And it's a question of weeks, and the ability of children to concentrate really vanishes. Yeah? So, in Great Britain, they have already a special clinic for media addicted young ones. The youngest patient I know about was a four-year-old girl who really had physical symptoms of addiction, So the parents had trained her to go to bed only with tablet. And after a while, the parents became aware the child was using the tablet like 4 to 5 hours a day with the age of four. And whenever the parents tried to take it away, the child became angry, cried, and even hit and bite the parents. So it has to be brought to a clinic. Of course, this is one extreme situation, but what we discover also in kindergartens more and more is that we get more and more children who don't have the capability of concentrating, not anymore, even in this young age. And then we really come to the point what Carr said and what we already said here. For us as adults, when we have the impact of computer and internet, we need a certain time, 1 hour's walk or 1 week vacation of detoxification, and we really can gain back the abilities we had, which is for this generation not possible, because when they never gain this capability, they can't go back to it. That's a real disaster. Yeah.
A guy named Tom Rex. And Tom, I unmuted you. I allowed you to talk if you want to say more here. But he asks, can the example of Casper Hauser give young ones hope to learn to concentrate? And I'm not quite sure what he means. So maybe you do, Uwe, or shall I have Tom ask, you know, say more about his question?
Yeah, that would be nice. I'm not quite sure what he means.
I don't either. Tom, you need to come off. There you go.
Okay, could you hear me?
Yes, we do. Yes.
Okay, well, what I'm thinking of is Casper Hauser was put into a artificial world, and so he was able to break out of it, but with the right help. And I think we're talking about detoxification, there's one point in a story where his tutor says, "We're trying to make a human being out of you," and Casper says, "Am I not already a human being?"
Right. Yeah.
That's an example of someone who had to learn something they never learned before. It's something that, in my personal life, I call retrospective. Recollection of something I never experienced before. So I have to go back and relive it to bring it to the present. So anyway, that was just some thoughts on
yes.
I'm not an expert on child development, but I've yeah. been reading the Casper Hauser story. So
yeah. Okay, yes, I see your point, but the difference is Kasper Hauser was not in a virtual situation, but in an isolated situation. So he was hindered to learn things like talking, reading, walking, playing, because he was isolated for years into this dark cellar, just having his one horse with wheels on, he can move, could move, etc. The difference is for the children that grew up with internet or in the internet, is they grew up with a virtual reality and they don't have a leak of reality at all, like Kasper Hauser did, which then would be the basis for him as an grown up to even learn and develop things he couldn't develop till then. So just one example, and then Sophie should be next to Nicholson. She's already raising hand all the time. But to say just one more thing, if we especially look at computer games, the main thing with computer games is I can have a real big impact. I can acquire worlds. I can lead armies. I can whatever do. Without the need of going out, without the need to overcome inner or outer hindernisse. So I don't have really to train. It works. Yeah. And what we see from all pupils who really play a lot of computer games is that the level of frustration against negative situations in real life really increases. So when it doesn't work on the right way in the right moment, and you come as a parent or teacher and say, "Well, yeah, that was a very nice try, but maybe try it again. It will become better." They get frustrated and they get, to say it clear, pissed off and say, "Now leave me alone. I don't fucking care." And they go back to the game worlds where they are the champs right from the beginning without the need of really hard working process. And that is also a very big difference to the situation of Kaspar Hauser, who all his life had a league of wanting to learn something. And then even as a grown up, had the capability to have this hard work to develop what he missed in childhood. Yes.
Yeah. Sophia Nicholson, hello.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for a very interesting talk. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about, online education. You know, obviously during the pandemic when all schools were closed, there was a lot of online learning, and some of it is continuing now, in some parts of the world there's a lot of, you know, lots of people are homeschooled rather than going to an actual school building. Yeah. And I work for an online Waldorf education platform. And so I don't know, you know, that obviously that there are children being taught through the medium of, you know, the internet, although we try not to, you know, the attempt is to not to have hours and hours of screen time, not to have, you know, such long lessons. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's obviously a very kind of, you know, it's not like free roaming on the internet and just clicking on this, and, you know, you have to be interacting with the teacher and doing what the teacher is asking you to do and interacting with the other people who are in the classroom, virtual classroom. I don't know what you think about that, or if that can be, that's enough really for my question.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, well, I discovered it for myself during COVID and the lockdown periods we had in Germany. I don't know how it was at your places in the US, how long you had lockdowns and etc. So I also had to give webinars for mainly then for students, not for pupils. But what I discovered in all those situations is that there is a very big difference whether you know someone already from out of real life or not. Yeah. So, for example, Andrew, I met in October in real life in 3D and color with smell, etc. And so for me, it was really, no problem to see him today on a screen. And I still have this full image of him inside me. And I had this situation that I had some courses with students, which started before Corona. So I knew the students already. And then we couldn't meet in real life. So we made it online, and it was very good work. But I also had one course in Stuttgart at the teacher seminar, which started in Corona times. So we only started online. And then we had the funny situation that on one day I was physically in Stuttgart and it was a small course, normally six people. On that day, it were only three. And it was the last day of my epoch. It was very nice weather, and I was sitting in the office in the teacher seminar, and we came to the end and no more questions. And then I said, now, I tell you what, I'm a smoker. I'm here at the teacher seminar in the office, and it's very nice weather. So when we are done here, I will go to the smoker's corner in the park and sit there. So, of course, we are not allowed to meet, but if you by chance pass by, we could see us in real life. And then the one guy says, well, I'm living at the teacher's seminars. I'm just one level above you. I will pass by. And the other said, give me 10 minutes. I'll be there. And then we had the situation that we, after this online course, met the first time. And it was very interesting because three students came, and with all three students, we both, not only me, but also them, had to take a second look to discover, oh yeah, that's him. Yeah, and the funny thing, for example, the students told me, we didn't think you are so tall, because I'm 1.89 meters. Yeah, which you don't see when you just see me on the screen. And they saw, so it's little tiny docent. And in real life, it was a surprise. Well, no, it's a tall man, etc. So, and especially with children, I think that's a very important point, that children should have at least one real life meeting with the people who then give online sessions in addition. Now, of course, it's a wonderful thing that we had this technology, especially for the times. I'm very grateful for it. But this idea that still some people have, that we could stop with normal schools, that children stay at home and learn from the best teachers in the world through the internet, is absurd. Yeah, it's on an intellectual level, maybe, but on the developing of social skills, etc., it would be a catastrophe. We need the classroom full of people with noise and with smell and with touch and etc. Yeah.
Sophia, anything else on that? Are you okay?
No, that was great. Thank you. Yes. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think I'm thinking more with my questions in relation to people who are choosing homeschooling. So the alternative is not to go to school because their parents don't want that at all. So they are having their online education, plus they try to balance it out and have socializing with real other children in other contexts, but it's not the people that they're in the virtual classroom with. But anyway, thank you. Thanks very much.
You're welcome,
Sophia. We have time for just one more question. And before I go back to Valdemar, for this, I just want to mention on July 9th will be our next webinar. And we have Professor Aaron French, who lives not too far from you, Uwe. Actually, I'm not quite sure where in Germany, but I thought it was near Berlin. And he's going to speak Rudolf Steiner as philosopher of technics. And that will be our last webinar before the MISTECH conference in August. And then I will be posting soon the autumn. Goodness, it's so hard to say autumn when it's, I haven't yes. Yeah, the autumn schedule. Valdemar, I have you on, I'm taking you off of mute. You need to, yeah, there we go. What's your question? And then we'll close. Yeah.
No, I just wanted to add two things about Kaspar Hauser. I don't think one should use Kaspar Hauser as a master, as an example for anything, because he was an extraordinary soul, personality. And there were so many interesting things about him. For instance, when he was freed, he had an extraordinary memory. He could remember titles of, you know, German titles of the mayor and so on. And he would recite the whole titles before the name and so on. And then his tutor forced him to eat meat, and he lost a great part of his memory. Second thing is, I wanted to remember you. One of the main contributions, Steiner's contributions to schooling in elementary school from grades 1 to 8, one of the main attitudes of the teacher is creating an authority with love. It's a magic phrase, authority with love. I think it's impossible to create such a thing through the internet when yes. there is no contact with the teacher.
Right. I totally agree to that. Right. Yeah.
Well, Uwe, it's been just a delight, as it was back in October, to share Thank this you, time. Guys. And as you point out, I'm very glad we met in person. The whole point of our MISTECH conferences was an inspiration from a Rosemary McMullen. When we had been meeting just online as a study group, she said, why don't we get together and actually see each other and breathe each other's breath of air? And so we did, and that started these annual conferences. So I hope many of you can attend. It'll be at Pine Hill, as I said, in Wilton, New Hampshire. And we'll have in July 9th, Professor Aaron French. And Uwe, just magnificent having you. I appreciate all the work that you put into this, but all the work that you do to help humanity. So thank you again.
Thank you very much. And all who listened today and will watch in the next days, I wish you all the best and take care of our children. That's what we have to take care of. Thanks to the internet, it was possible. So good Bye. Evening. Bye-bye.